You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hello and welcome. Excuse me. I'm a little sick. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. I'm Fess of ArgerComic.com, and with me we have our co-hosts, Kelly Turnbull of the PunchlineIsMachismo.com.
Hello.
And Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Well, hello there.
And this week we are returning once again. We have Yamino from SisterClaire.com.
Hello, hello.
And Chloe from GoGetARoomie.com.
Hey.
Both of which are part of the Hiveworks comic collective. I'm not sure how you're actually supposed to, from Hiveworks or TheHiveworks.com.
Hiveworks Comics, I think, is the site.
All right.
No, it's TheHiveworks.com, Yamino.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, listen.
It's one of those.
I actually think he's wanting to add Hiveworks Comics to there so he can. It sounds a little bit more comics specific. Is in the name, yeah. And we've had a few people on from the Hiveworks from before, and also they are presently graciously hosting us as well. So yay!
I should be joining the ranks eventually whenever I get my new site up and running.
So, this week, I was wanting to talk about with Yamino and Chloe about basically their fan art endeavors. We've talked about like fan fiction and fan art in the past, but I think we got some pretty interesting things we can talk about here as we'll get into it. Also, this was a particular episode where people could email us questions for Yamino or Chloe or both and get entered into a contest, a drawing, or I don't know. Yeah, I actually think Yamino and Chloe will be picking the winners. We'll see. To basically win a signed copy of Yamino's variant cover edition of Adventure Time number 3 and a sketch from either of them. So, we're going to get into some questions a little bit later, but first, I if you don't mind me, Chloe, if I want to start with Yamino,
I don't know, I don't think I'm okay with that.
You want to fight for it, Chloe?
Yeah, sure. Via Skype, go on.
Arm wrestling.
All right, I'll give Yamino the first move. Go ahead, Yamino.
Well. The thing is, I think a lot of people, at least on this show, recognize Yamino a little bit more, and also a little bit more prominent is of how much she's done with like doing her own fan stuff in regards to Adventure Time.
Yeah, I know she's better.
I got
no. Go ahead. I'm just kidding.
Nickname Fandom Princess because I did so much fan work, especially for Adventure Time. So if I had an original character, it would be a princess who just does fan work all the time.
So I think this needs a little bit of background as far as basically during, I think, the season 3 of Adventure Time, there was one particular episode called What Was Missing, which sort of seemingly, maybe, perhaps, indicated that Princess Bubblegum and Morsling maybe had a relationship in the past. And people can sort of interpret that how they want, I suppose. But needless to say, as soon as that episode aired, the freaking internet exploded.
Nah.
Mm. And Yamino was already behind a lot, not like behind it, but she already had a lot of stuff going for her since she was already basically drawing... it's not slash. What is it called when you take shipping?
Oh yeah.
When you take two characters from an established story, and you basically put them into a relationship together. And so, what did you call this?
Well, there's slash is generally for two guys. People say that it's for all characters, but generally, if you say slash, people will imagine it's two guys. So there's also the term fem slash, which is for female characters. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly what I do. But you can also just say shipping as an overall term for relationshipping. It's short for that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know. I had no idea what the hell that was. Shipping. Uh-huh. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, now I know.
Yeah, get up to date on your internet terminology.
I know, it's sad.
Now, Yamino, you were actually shipping Princess Bubblegum and Marceline before this episode ever happened. Is that right?
Well, I think I kind of was, but I never thought that it would have any sort of chance in canon. So that's, I think that's why the ship became suddenly really popular and there was this outpouring of fan art for it, because a lot of people had kind of shipped it privately, like in the back of their mind, like, wouldn't that be cool, like wistfully. And then that episode came out and everyone was like, oh my glob,
it's happened.
Because, you know, the show, it doesn't explicitly say that it was a romantic interest, but the only other times that we've seen Marceline get so worked up and upset, like, was when somebody that she really loved treated her badly, like her father or her ex-boyfriend. And in this episode, she gets really, really upset that Bonnibel's like not responding to her the way she wants to. And it clearly shows that they used to have a good relationship, but something has happened that we don't know what, which I'm hoping will be revealed later, either in the comics or, which I haven't read yet. There's a Marceline and the Scream Queens comic, which is about her and Bonnibel. Or in future episodes. But yeah, so we don't exactly know what happened, what went wrong, but we know that they used to be really good friends and now they're kind of on shaky terms.
Maybe Princess Bubblegum ate her fries.
Maybe.
In joke, nobody's going to get that.
Oh man, I haven't seen an episode of Ninja Times since the first season.
Actually, I found out that I had, because I don't have TV at all, and they only have like season one on DVD, which is apparently really rare for... is it Cartoon Network?
Yeah, they even do a lot of those ones where it's like they release like shows that aren't Adult Swim ones, like any of the Cartoon Network proper shows. They don't release them in box sets a lot of the time. They do that, like, you know, here's a DVD that's episodes like 1 to 3, and here's a DVD that's episodes like 7 and 8. And it's like, you know, they're just like scattered and hard to, you know, it's not like a here's season one.
Yeah, I don't get that sometimes. It's like when you gotta... I mean, at least digitally. I mean, what's the harm in, like, just selling them digitally at least, like, through iTunes or Amazon or something like that? I seem to, like, almost, like, okay, so I've downloaded all of Adventure Time at one point, except for season 4. And I got rid of a lot of the episodes, and most of the episodes that I'm actually keeping are all from season 3, so.
Yeah.
But anyway. So... So you had this sort of following. In fact, you made a Tumblr for this, I want to get
explain what Tumblr is. Did we the Tumblr was for an Ask blog, and I should explain what that is for people who don't know. On Tumblr, there's kind of a common thing to do is to make an Ask blog where people can submit questions to your account, and then you answer it in character as certain characters from a show. And people also do alternate reality versions of the characters too. And usually it involves drawing, so you'll answer it with comics. And I thought that was a really cool format, and I never did it before. And Adventure Time style is pretty simple, so it didn't take me too long to draw. And I made one about Marceline and Bubblegum after that episode came out.
And that's, you know, say what you want about Tumblr, but Tumblr has a whole different community. And a really large part of the community, at least who I follow, there's a lot of people drawing their own versions of existing characters. And then, of course, these Ask blogs, which are incredibly unique to Tumblr. And you will see them for, like, a lot of basically shipped characters. There's one I follow that's called Ask Human Pinky Dash, where it's, like, a human version of Pinkie Pie and Rainbow Dash.
Well, they remind me a lot of like the Please accounts or whatever that people used to do all the time on DeviantArt, where it was, you know, it was basically for like the same kind of like RPing stuff, but you know, people would make like, you know, like Sephiroth Please or whatever, and then they'd go around like responding to things in Sephiroth or like doing, you know, the same kind of like hard answering questions and stuff like that.
It's the evolution of roleplay.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that with with, I do remember at one point you being called out, so to speak, essentially on the lines of, oh, you're wasting your time doing stuff that isn't your original work and blah, 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 blah.
Someone actually said it wasn't, they weren't just saying I was wasting my time because it wasn't original, but they were saying that it was too pornographic or something. And they were like, you will never get hired by a mainstream studio. And I had to kind of stifle my laughter at that because they didn't know that at the time I was secretly working on an Adventure Time cover, like an but I wasn't allowed to say it. So I was just like, okay, hold that thought and come back.
Well, plus the person that asked you to do the cover knew you because of that Ask blog.
Exactly. That was the irony, is that she would have not known about me if I hadn't started this Ask blog.
So there you go. You showed him.
She is one of those things that can be kind of tricky ground, because I know that, like, you know, like, I mean, your stuff is pretty PG-13, I think, but, like, you know, like, it's not like, you know, like, oh, here's some hardcore smut, but, like, stuff like some fan art definitely like creeps out creators sometimes, you know. It's like they probably feel I mean obviously you're doing it right, but it's not one of those things where it's like, yeah, start an Ask blog and everything will work out for you.
You'd be surprised. I think it also really depends on the studio that you're talking about. With Disney it might be different because they have a reputation to upkeep, but the Adventure Time people, they hire people who've drawn, you know, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of my artwork is PG-13, but some of it's not. And some of it was including characters from Adventure Time that wasn't PG-13, and they don't care.
Well, I mean, I've worked on a lot of adult shows, and I mean, I've worked at studios where they just come up and like plop gay porn on my desk and say like, okay, here's your reference for the next project. But it's like, you know, sometimes you can draw certain characters in certain situations that are like, okay.
So and I probably mentioned this before, but I remember when I was, cause I was already picking up Adventure Time, in the comic book stores. And then the number 3 came out and I looked at, you know, what I looked at, when there's multiple covers available, I always look at which one looks the best. And so I pick up what ends up being Yamano's, and I was like, this looks really familiar. Wait a minute, I think. And then I like scrounging, looking for your name, and then it's like, oh, there's your real name. Oh, there I found your little signature. It's like, oh, this is so awesome. So. Because I know her.
It is a really good feeling when you go in a comic shop and you recognize people that you know on the covers, like their names.
Oh yeah, and Adventure Time has been great for that, just getting a whole bunch of assorted artists for the alt covers. I think it's fantastic.
They're really open-minded with different sorts of styles and different artists doing artwork for them. I mean, I find it really, really genius the way they kind of their openness to others and, you know, picking ideas from people and collaborating and stuff. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more progressive than a lot of animation studios.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
I don't know. It's like, I've worked at a lot of cool animation studios, so I don't want to be a,
well, I know of, I don't know of any other mainstream studio that has the power to do something like this. Maybe they would like to, but
yeah, I mean, like if you're talking like the big, you know, like Cartoon Network is like, yeah, you know, on the level like Nickelodeon and Disney, those are the only two that really compare. But most studios are like, you know, little operations that are kind of like contracted to,
they would to never
do individual shows for them,
right?
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and let's get a couple of our questions submitted from fans asked here. These are going to be for both of you.
Okay.
Okay, so this first question comes from Kadeem. I'm not sure how you're supposed to say that. To both of you, do you remember your first fan work, and what was it?
Chloe, you can go first, because I went first last time.
Yeah, but I don't know the answer to that, and you probably do, because I never thought of it. I never thought of my first fan art. I do remember... a fan art, a drawing I did a really long time ago, and I found it recently, and it was a Pikachu, but I don't know if that counts. I mean, everyone's drawn Pokemon, so.
No, that's a fan art.
Yeah, that's a fan art, but I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure that will be the first fan arts I've ever done, because I don't know what sorts. Pokemon was basically the first anime slash gaming that I really was obsessed with at one point. So I think that, yeah, that's pretty much Pokemon, I guess.
Were you not finished?
I guess I was. Go ahead.
I was so eager to talk about mine.
Go ahead.
The first fan art that I ever did, I mean, I'm pretty sure I attempted to do other ones before this, but the first one that I can vividly remember doing and being really proud of was my very first Powerpuff Girls fan art, and I drew it horribly. They looked like creepy bugs. I was so happy about it, and I put it up on my wall, and I kept it there for years, even after I learned how to actually draw the Powerpuff Girls correctly, and I drew them so many times. Powerpuff Girls was my first big fandom, and I was so into it, and I'm still so into it. You can see the influence even in Sister Claire.
Mm-hmm. In Sister Claire, you can, with the especially the feet, like the shape of the feet, how it's skinny,
yeah,
and then it goes fatter at the feet.
Zeke, sorry, that's our dog.
We have animals now.
Yes, we have a cat and a dog. But I was gonna say. Yeah, Powerpuff Girls was not just the first fan art I did, but it was the first fandom that I got really involved in. And I remember I submitted so much fan art to this website called RuffyRuff.net that I was the first artist to get my own page on that site because he didn't know where to put it.
Wow.
What was the site again?
Gallery. Oh, it's down now, but it was called RowdyRuff.net. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Please don't look up my artwork. Yeah, and then after that, other people were like, I want my own gallery, but I was the first.
I got another question here. It sort of relates to that one. This is also for both of you. In your opinions, and reflecting back to your earlier artisthood, how greatly was doing fan art had an effect on your skills and your own styles? And do you ever find that the style... of your favorite fandoms visible in your creative... You kind of already answered this one.
Yeah.
Definitely do. And not just with Powerpuff Girls. Like, I've noticed that over the course of my life, like, whatever show, whatever animation style I was really into at the time, I would mimic it until I learned how to... I wouldn't say master it, because I'm not a master of art yet, but I would mimic it as well as I could, and all of my original work would start to take on aspects of that. And for a while, it was more like I was just copying styles one after the other. But after a while, you start to learn to pick your favorite elements of different styles and mix them together, which is kind of what Sister Claire is. It's like all of my favorite things mashed up into one.
Mm. I've had my greatest influence, my first greatest influence was when I copied art. It was mangas. It basically was when I lived in United States and I was like 12 years old, and I in Kentucky, I had two best friends and they were really, really, really into mangas, and specifically yaoi. So two guys together, like Sephiroth and Cloud and all that happy stuff. And that's how I began to be in a fandom. Actually, my first fandoms were mostly yaoi, because it's the first fandom I discovered, and my best friends didn't really leave me any choice. I mean, I'm not saying I was forced into anything.
They didn't leave you any choice.
I had no choice.
You draw that tender Sephiroth and Cloud romance.
But no, actually... the first time, like, for me, yaoi, it was really a fandom, and I did not know really about the real homosexuality. Like, I never saw homosexual couples. So for me, yaoi was a kind of, like, ideal kind of manga sort of style slash story. But it was at my first manga convention, I saw two guys making out, and I was like, oh, so that's where yaoi comes from. And then, no, really. I just never, I mean, in my mind, it was like, I didn't even know they existed, like, really in real life. I never thought, or, you know.
A lot of yaoi fangirls feel that way.
Yeah. And then I saw, actually, it was at that manga convention that I also saw two girls holding hand with a Yuri, so girl and girl, t-shirt on. And I was like, oh my God. Those are lesbians. And it was like my mind just kind of exploded. Holy shit. I mean, there's a whole entire world I've never knew. And then
picturing like Aladdin music playing in the background.
And that's what started the whole different fandom of Yuri. And, you know, actually, oh my God, that exists. And like, what sort of mangas can I pick up from that? And then it just became, there you go. Now it's way less manga, and it kind of evolved, thankfully, because for me, my art style now, it does have influence from mangas, of course, but I like to know that I can improve through time and picking styles again and continuing, like Yamino, having mashups of different styles, and it's just having a pile of styles and continuing to evolve that way. So I'm glad I moved to
something that's your own too. Like, yeah, it's just copying things anymore. When you see your artwork, when people see your artwork, they can recognize it. That's Chloe's art.
Yeah, true. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of funny. When people started to tell me that they recognized my style, I was like, really? My style? I mean, for me, I never knew it could be recognizable, so now I do, though. I can see it more and more. Yeah, there is something. Well, so that's cool.
I think even your earlier strips to Go Get a Roomie had still a lot of different personality to it. I mean, it didn't look like anything like else. I mean, it did look like its own thing as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Unless there was a different comic or other work that you've done that aren't as prominent on your sites as far as like older stuff that you've worked on.
Not really. And comics, I've done one other comic that was a lot like Go Get a Roomie and the kind of mood that there is, like how sex is fun and not something taboo. Mm-hmm. And it was a 10 strip comic, and some people still remember it. It's Sappho's Child, I think I called it Sappho's Child, and it had the same style that Rumi started with. And actually, that's I think the comic where I thought, where people were like, why don't you do a web comic? And I'm like, yeah, why not? That can be an idea. And I think that was that comic was actually a big help for me to go, wait, maybe I can do this regularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, so there you go.
I think that's what happens with like a lot of people, especially like on DeviantArt, where you'll get people that do like, I feel like doing this comic or whatever, and then you get a lot of people, hey, I should do a webcomic!
Well, I always feel like art style is sort of like an accent. Like, you always talk to people who say like, you know, like, oh, I don't have a style or whatever, like the same way you talk to people who are like, I don't have an accent, until you put them next to somebody who has a totally different accent, and you know, like, oh, you know, it's one of those things that you're like not aware of until you...
Except
you it outside of the vacuum.
Except I'm really aware of my French accent, but that's another thing.
All right. Let's see if we can get one more question in before we take our first break. We'll do this one. This is also for both of you. What are the biggest motivators or motivations in your life to get work done?
Good old Catholic guilt. If I don't get my work done, people will be mad at me, and that makes me feel bad. So I want to get it done. But also because I really love what I'm doing. Like, sometimes I will be really aggravated that I have to stay up another all-nighter to get a page done on time. But what it boils down to is, if you really love your story and your characters, you'll want to keep working on it. That's the goal. You don't want to feel like you are obliged to work on something, because then you lose all the fun in it. And it's like, why not just get a desk job? If you're going to do a job you hate, do one you actually get money for, you know?
Well, certainly won't be comics anyway.
Yeah.
Don't
if it's
you
to get money.
Don't you draw at your desk?
Sorry.
Don't you draw at your desk, though?
Yeah, but that's not the same thing as a cubicle.
Yeah, yeah. Like a 9-to-5 job, I mean. Because pretty much the only reason anyone gets into comics is because they love comics. You don't get into it because you're going to make tons of money or...
Some people do.
Are deluded.
Yeah, they don't last very long.
I mean, the people who do make tons of money. Yeah, there are, you can make tons of money, but it's usually kind of a fluke.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yep.
It depends. Sometimes it's out of luck, too, because you know the right people and they lead you to other contacts that can, you know, that offer you nice price.
Yeah,
like,
it's not always luck either. It's also about being really aggressive. I mean, not like shoving your comic into everyone's face, but like knowing how to present yourself when you're meeting editors at a convention, for example. Like, you can't just let opportunities fall into your lap. Okay, right. I'm sorry. I've kind of deviated the conversation.
No, it's all important. It's all good information.
And yeah, there's definitely like a line between like, okay, when am I being like aggressive and creepy, and when am I like showing them that, you know, like like the Ugly Americans interview I did, like that, you know, like I showed up for that test and I was just like, oh, I want this so bad. Like I have to get this job. Like, you know, even if I'm just like making photocopies or something, like I have to be working here. And it was just like figuring out like, okay, so how many letters do it? Okay. I'll send like one letter saying like, thank you for bringing me here and like, you know, giving me this opportunity. And then, you know, like no others. I want, you know, like I'll show some, you know, like I recognize the studio, like Augenblick, that was doing it. So it's like, I'll show off my knowledge of Augenblick, but not like creep them out and act like a, you know, like, oh, I'm such a fan of Super Jail. And, you know.
Yeah, there's a fine line.
And with that fine line comes a big, thick, gray line in which we'd have to take a break. And we'll be right back.
Whee!
KingTractorPress.com, KingTractorPress.com. Comics so cool they'll even impress your mom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. With a strip like daddy's girls, causing a frenzy in the comic world. King Tractor Press has even got your true crime series and your sci-fi. KingTractorPress.com. Comics so cool they'll even impress your mom. KingTractorPress.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network. Follow us on Twitter at WebcomicBeacon. Email us at WebcomicBeacon@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We are also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Now we're going to move on to Chloe.
Whee! That's me. It's me, Chloe.
It's a me, Chloe.
It's a me, Chloe. There you go.
There we go. Because this is something that I found out later after the fact, which sort of clinched this particular episode to be in existence. It was like, okay, I wanted to get Yamano back to talk about, you know, working with, you know, Adventure Time and Sugarless Gum is the shipping term you use for Morceline and Bubblegum. And then I got a link to Chloe's Kim Possible fan art shipping comic or whatnot. So
fan comic.
Fan comic.
I remember that, like, back in the day when I was on 4chan.
Oh, you actually remember this from back then?
I remember, like, I'm pretty sure it was her stuff. Because, like, now, you know, it's like, this is all, like, I don't know, would that have been like 4 years ago or 5 years ago or something like that? Because, like, I remember seeing like a lot of like Kigo stuff back in the day on like the comics board on 4chan.
So I've never actually seen Kim Possible. Do you want to give us a primer for the show itself?
Oh, geez, me?
Yeah.
Actually, I've I don't know if I can do it justice.
It's about
but,
this 16-year-old redhead who does spy stuff, and she has a rival who's green, and they make out in Chloe's comic.
There you go. Thank you. Yeah, we know.
Yeah. So you've actually seen the show, right?
Basically, I've seen a few episodes, not all of them, but I've seen all the episodes with Shigo in it, who's her rival, and they're actually in a few episodes, memorable episodes for the Kigo fans, of course, but they really have, it's more than rivalry, it's two or three times they actually help each other out, and in the end, Draken, the bad guy, will go, Shigo, you're going soft, and she's going like, no, I'm not, and then she fires her green fireballs at him, but there's always a hint that there is more than rivalry between Kim and Shigo. There's this whole respect between them because they can keep each other, like they challenge each other all the time. And Shigo knows how to throw back Kim's punches. She's not just Draken, who's an idiot and who wants to conquer the world, but usually it ends up in a big explosion. I mean, in an explosion, not the whole world, but just his lab.
Right, right, right.
But, and Shigo is actually the one that, you know, just fights back, but not just physically, but also in the words. She's really, she's snarky and she's just cynical and she just, they throw each other a little, and she calls Kim princess. Okay, let me, look. She gives Kim all these nicknames. She never calls her Kim. She, either Kimmy, Princess, Pumpkin, or Cupcake. I mean, come on. And it's always like, come on, Cupcake, you know you want it. And then, bam, they go start fighting. And there's always this sort of, you know, and if a shipper with their femme/goggles see this, they're, look, it just jumps at you and you're like, oh my God, Kigo, it exists. And actually, I saw I met the artist who did the designs for the characters, Silver, and I told him about the Kigo and if he knew about it, and he's like, I'm like, do you know what Kigo means? And he's like, Kigo, no. And then I explained to him, and he's like, oh, okay, yeah, that will work. And I'm like, yes. For him, it was not at all a surprise. He must have heard about it somewhere, I think. But so, yeah, and it's also just one last point. I don't want to bore you to death, but in the fourth season, I think, Kim actually goes out with her best friend, Ron, who's the
Ron
kind of
probable.
Idiot. Yeah, Ron, unstoppable, I think. Or Ron.
Oh, yeah, Ron Stoppable, yeah.
And, and the fact that they go out with each other actually created more Kigo fans than before because it just didn't work. Like, they're brothers and sisters. They're not in blood, but I mean, they just work really well as a team together because this whole best friendship thing. And then it kind of ruined everything, and it was not credible when they went out with each other. It's like, Kim,
didn't
what?
They like? Like, didn't they cap off the series with, like, Draken and Shigo hooking up or something? It was just like, what? Like, oh.
Yeah, it was not, it's not explicit, but you see, yeah, it's hinted at strongly that they kind of, you know. But
it just
Draken
totally
is kind
of like one of those things, like, we need something to fill, like, the last couple, like, just whatever.
Exactly. But so there was a lot of fan fictions and fan arts for that because Kigo just seemed, those two, Kim and Shigo, just seemed to really complement each other and actually, you know, keep each other on toe and just, you know. And I'm done. I can't believe I talked that long.
No, that's fine. That's why we're here today.
Yes, I know.
It's group therapy. No, I'm just kidding.
That's the fan comic.
Yes.
I started in 2009, so it was a long time ago, but people just kept pushing me to do another page and another page. So it just started to become more and more important to a few readers.
So how long did that actually take to is the whole story completed now?
No.
Oh, no.
No, because
there's 46.
I always feel guilty when I talk about it because I started it in 2009, and then it's like sometimes I can do like 2-3 pages updates, but like per 5 months. I mean, it really depends. It's not regular at all. I never said it was an official webcomic or anything.
Right, right.
But I know it's important to a few readers more than I think, actually. And I still have 3 pages to finish it. And I always want to get working on it. But since Go Get a Roomie is my priority,
because that pays
the bills. We're starting
to plan out a book for Go Get a Roomie too. So it's kind of, I wish I had the time to finish the Kigo comic and even start other fan comics. I wish I could do comics for every one of my fandoms, but I just can't. It's not physically possible. And I'm not like Yamino, who does Ask Blots, even though.
It's like, oh man, I see so much of this stuff. I'm like, oh, how do you even have that much energy? Like, I think it's just like that. That's what having an art job has done to me. It's like I draw for 8 hours and I come home and I try to draw and I see people like doing all these like, oh, it's like any whim you throw at them. It's like they just like draw it right on the spot. It's like, I remember when I could do that. Oh, you kids and your energy.
Yeah, I was reading the comic before and there's a significant improvement in the art over the course of the comic. I was wondering how long it actually took you from the beginning to the latest page on there. Like how many years was that?
Well, 2009. I don't remember when in 2009, but I know the year. You can probably see on my DeviantArt, there's the first few pages and there's the date. But till I think the latest update I did like 3-4 months ago.
Okay.
And I'm not proud of it, and apologize to my fans. But
what are you not proud of?
I'm not proud of not being able to give them regular pages.
Well,
I always like whenever someone asks me when are you going to finish it or when's the next update, I just can't tell them. When I have no idea when I'll have the time to, and when I think I will, I have other stuff to do. So it's always soon, soon, and I keep it at that. So it's not really good for as a reader. I'd feel kind of let down myself.
Well, as long as any reasonable fan should understand that this is it'll get done when it gets done. You have work that pays to get done first.
Well, I'm like, the show's been over for a while, so I can totally understand it being like, it's sort of like the inspiration well is kind of like running, sometimes if you're like watching something, it's right there, like every week it's fresh. It's like in your head, you're like, oh, I'm inspired. I want to do this right now. And then when it's like been off the air for a while, you're kind of like, well, I want to draw Adventure Time now.
There you go. Oh, someone's knocking at the door.
That might be my chair clicking. I don't know.
Slam.
It was like a free chair that somebody like left in my apartment. So I was like, oh, take that chair.
Free is good.
Sometimes it can be a detriment.
I definitely got a desk once in the same manner. It was like, oh, free desk left in my apartment. And I'm pretty sure the guy who lived there before was schizophrenic because it was just the word like desk written on it hundreds of times and like Sharpie pen. And the entire surface of the desk was covered in the word desk.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Maybe it was just modern art.
Well, the room, like, there was also writing all over the walls. Like, it would just say, like, knife, 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 knife. And, nothing would, like, take it off. I ended up, like, painting the room with, like, black oil paint. And I don't know. I'm sidetracking this conversation, but it was...
You changed the lock on the door, right?
Yeah.
I hope you did at least that.
That was the same place I got mold poisoning.
Oh, so let's move on to a couple more questions from people that have submitted for their chances to win. Did you know how – this is for both of you. Did you know how successful your fan art would be? Did you attempt to do this sort of thing before in a different fandom? I think they're talking about your more recent stuff. But did you know how successful your fan art would be?
I don't think anybody really expects to be super popular doing fan. Well, maybe some people do, but I definitely didn't start off. I didn't start off doing fan art because I was expecting it would make me popular. I started doing it because I am a really fangirlish person. And when I see something that I like, I feel like I have to get it out somehow, like all of this enthusiasm for the show or the movie or whatever. And so I do tons of fan art for it. It just so happens that fan art is one of the easiest ways for people to discover you, because people probably aren't going to be searching for your original work if they don't know what it is, but they will be searching for Sailor Moon or Wreck-It Ralph or Kim Possible or whatever. And hopefully they'll enjoy your original stuff enough to stick around. But yeah.
That's how I started as well, is on DeviantArt. I started to draw my fandoms doing fan arts. And it started as a really small community with people, you know, just liking what I ship. So they came back for that more than my drawings, well, for me at least. And then as things went on, as my style improved, people stuck around more for the art and the ideas more than the fan service I could provide them. So then when I started Go Get Urumi, for example, everyone that read it were people that at first came for the fan arts, but then they liked Go Get Urumi. They already saw a bit of my humor in the fan arts I drew. So, you know, they knew what to expect. So it really helps a lot.
I think you made a really good point too, Chloe, about how it's about community. How fandom is not just about doing fan art for yourself, but it's about connecting with other fans. And that can be a really rewarding act of doing fan art, too.
Mm-mm. Yeah, because the difference between professional comic artists, especially before internet was so big, and now is that artists are more available for their fans, and like they have websites like Tumblr where you can ask questions to your favorite artists, or DeviantArt where you leave a comment. So there's really, or Twitter, and then there's really an exchange more and more with the help of internet. So that's great. I mean, fans feel, I mean, when they know that the artist they like answer them and at least read what they write to the artist, they it feels really good for them. So they'll stick around. I mean, if you answer them just once, they'll be like, oh my god, fan squeal, and just completely gush out, and yeah, they'll stick around. I mean, it's not for that you answer them, but you know,
it's definitely like one of those things where, like, I feel like, you know, people are still kind of figuring out like the right balance of like paying attention to people and like, you know, kind of like letting, like, it's like, because people, you know, they feel like they're super, and you know, like, I don't know, like you're saying, like all these artists and writers and stuff are like really available out there, but like it's, and you know, like it is really cool to like, you know, talk to somebody and like get, you know, somebody you think is really awesome like responds to you, but it's like at the same time you have people who like feel like super entitled to your time, I guess, like they'll send you something and if you don't, like, you know, it's like if they don't have an answer for you or something, or if that, you know, it's something they kind of choose to ignore, then they're like, oh, what a bitch, why aren't they getting done? They don't care. And it's like, well, they get like 700 of these messages a day, so like they kind of got to pick their battles. And
right. Yeah.
And that comes into another question. Now, this one's specifically for Yamino, but you know, you both could quite possibly answer it. How do you deal with the haters on the internet? People say such hurtful things, but you always seem to deal with haters in such a cool way.
Well, I'm really glad that people get that impression, because I have to say the first couple times I got mobbed by anons on the internet, I didn't take it too well, as my close friends who I confided in at the time could attest to. Like, I don't like it when people are upset with me. Naturally, I want to please people and I want to be well liked. So when a bunch of people come to my page and start posting like death threats and calling me derp killer. this was brony drama. I'm not going to get into it here. You can easily look it up. But I went from being pretty well liked in My Little Pony fandom to being like public enemy number one overnight because of a decision that the heads of the network made. Like it was nothing to do with me, but people wanted to blame me for it. And I guess the way you deal with these haters is you don't give them any ammo. Don't act like it's bothering you. And it's easy to say that online because you can just not respond. And sometimes that's really hard to not respond when somebody's just sending you a bunch of bile in your inbox and you're like, you want to contest it. You know, you want to stand up for yourself or right. say like, how could you do this? How can you be so mean to me? But they don't care. Like, yeah. And what you have to keep in mind too, is that if you get any level of popularity online, people are going to hate you just for the sake of hating you. And if anything happens that gives them an excuse to attack you, they will do it. And they don't give a crap. Like if it, you know, they don't know anything about your personal situation. They have nothing to make you feel like a real human to them. So it's really easy for them to anonymously send really hateful stuff. And I guess, yeah, like the best advice I can say is don't react instantly. Like just take a break away from the computer, let yourself deep down. And then if you have to respond to something, like, cause there were times when people were starting really untrue. I was like, okay, I have to step in and correct these. But the important thing is to never let it like,
don't feed the troll.
Don't feed the trolls. Don't try to respond to all of them. And only respond if it's getting really bad, like it's going to start ruining your reputation all over because they're trying to spread misinformation and you have to correct something. But for me, it was really important to take breaks and talk to my friends about it to sort my mind out when I was getting really upset. Eventually it'll die down because they get bored. If you don't give them a good show, they're like, all right, this is not worth my time.
Yeah. Let's hate someone else.
That's the other thing you have to keep in mind is that the people who dedicate like their entire day to trying to offend someone over the internet, they're kind of a loser for that. Like they don't have anything better to do than to try to make you upset with messages.
I feel more pity for the ones that do that. Like that spend their whole time just sending hate mails to others. I feel more pity about them for them than for the artists. I mean, if the artists, you know, can handle it well and everything, I mean, I'll be like, those people, I mean, what? They must feel really miserable in their lives if all they want to do all day is to send hate mails. I mean, you know, they must feel really, really bad about themselves if they want to make other people feel so bad. So.
Sometimes it's almost impressive, like, how far out of the way somebody has to go to, like, something to pick a fight with you about. You know, it's like, there are things I put out there that people, like come back at me with, like, you know, like, oh, well, you know, like, you said this and this and this, and I want to fight about it. It's just like, how did you even interpret like that? It's such an abstract, like.
Let's move on to another question. This is for both of you. You're both very prominent webcomic artists, and I know that many people are inspired by and try to learn heavily from your work. But from this perspective, it can be very easy to start viewing someone else's work as infallible. What particular aspects of your artistry do you still struggle with or have yet to master?
All of it.
Yes.
I know that feeling.
When you get to a point where you feel like, aha, I have mastered this, that's when you stop learning. So I don't like to think of myself as having mastered anything yet. I think I can always improve. But something that I think I could really use more practice with sooner rather than later is anatomy, because I know I have improved a lot with my anatomy, even in just the last couple of years, but I can always get better. And I would like to be better at drawing poses without using so much reference all the time, although there's nothing wrong with using reference, highly recommend it.
In fact, a lot of people don't use enough reference, I think.
What? Sorry?
I think some people don't use enough reference.
Yeah. Definitely. people should use a lot more reference, but like I'm thinking of something I really admire about Chloe is that she can do these beautiful sketches right off the bat. Like, and my sketches are so ugly. Like I use so many lines on my sketches. Her sketches look like they could be finished artwork. Mine look like sketches, you know.
But that's because you're not used to doing sketches traditionally anymore. Because it's one thing to do traditionally. That's all I do before I scan my stuff. But you do it on the tablet and digitally, and it's just another thing.
I remember talking to Chris Hastings at a convention once. He was saying that, like, you know, he was doing Dr. Megan Ninja all digitally, and then he went to a convention and he was trying to draw on, like, you know, for just, you know, like people are coming up to the table and that, and he was like, oh crap, I have to relearn how to draw this character.
it's funny because that question about people getting inspired by someone's art and thinking it's perfect, and so they're going to copy it or take it as base for their own arts. I've actually had, like, just 30 minutes ago, an email from someone who said just that, saying that they had an artist friend who said that for bases to use other people's art. And so she asked me if she could use a panel in Go Get a Roomie to not copy it, but use it as a base. And so I actually answered quite long, a long answer, because I wanted to explain her that for me, at least, that was not the way to do it. And that panel in particular, now I can see how much I could have improved that, because I did it several months ago. And actually, when I drew that panel, I had no reference pics, and it would have been way better if I had some, because it's Lillian laying down and just, so I explained to her that no, the good way of practicing, of learning how to draw, is actually real life models or real life pictures. Because if you just take art bases from other people's art, I mean, the artist drawing that will already be deforming the drawing for his or her own style. So if you're taking that base for your own art, it won't be a trustful base. It will be something that's already deformed or even anatomically wrong, because some people, right, even professional comic artists, some just draw their woman, yeah, for example, with a waist that just isn't realistic at all, and don't want bases for that at all. No, that's not the way to do
it.
A friend of mine did a really good thing on just sort of like that subject, because, like, you know, like as everybody's always says, like, you know, just draw from real life. But at the same time, it's like, you don't learn to draw cartoons by drawing, like, you know, you need to learn how to stylize things and learn how to, like, you know, like what choices to make and sort of like why, like what choices that, like, cartoonists you like are making that are, like, you're finding appealing and, like, kind of why they work. And there's a friend of mine, she goes by Hey Sawbones on Tumblr and DeviantArt, and I think it's up on her DeviantArt, but it just says, like, drawing with symbols. And she's talking about how, like, you know, that whole, like, you know, they're drawing something that's once removed, and then so you're drawing it and yours is kind of like twice removed. But, like, if you figure out, you know, why, you know, like, why do they make a nose look like this? Like, you know, no matter how realistic you're seeing it, like, if it's a super photorealistic drawing, like, as long as it's a drawing, it's, you know, it's technically like a symbol that you, to you, yeah, represents a nose. And so it's just sort of like talking about, like, how to kind of figure out how to do those symbols right and, like, understand them, instead of just, like, you know, being like, oh, this is how, you know, Chloe draws a nose, so I'm taking Chloe's noses because she's great.
Kind of in that vein, I just want to add that I'm a very strong believer in the philosophy that you have to learn the rules before you break them. And that's why I was saying I really want to learn more about anatomy, even though my main style is super cartoony, like Sister Claire just has a circle for a head. But I think I've noticed a significant improvement in my stylized artwork after I learned real anatomy. And I think that once you learn how real bodies work, it's much easier to stylize and cartoonify them into believable,
right,
you know, stylized shapes.
I've always...
'Cause you'll understand why you're making those decisions, as opposed to just you know, copying someone else's and not really understanding why.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of professional artists will also say that as well. Though I've always felt that, you know, you can at least not like not trace over, but like if you want to like draw fan art or like draw somebody else's style, you can at least see, at least for me, it's worked where I've actually tried to draw other people's characters here and there. And I get a little bit more of a sense of some of the decisions that they made for why their eyes are like this, or so I've learned different little things, but I don't think I've ever really assimilated much. But yeah, you're right. Knowing
that's as long as you're conscious about why an artist chose that, and being conscious that that is not real life, that is not the base of things. But if you want to inspire yourself from how to draw a nose from an artist, I mean, I've done it, and even unconsciously speaking, when you read a comic, you take things, your eyes takes things, and your mind goes like, oh, hey, that's a nice way to draw this or that. But I think it's all right, but as long as you keep up with the real life reference pics and keep up with real life models and stuff, yeah, sure. And as long as you're conscious that it's a code, that it's someone else's style, and understanding why that person used that code, that symbol to draw that part of the body or whatnot, then it's all right. As long as you use things to improve yourself and doing it right.
Yeah, it's figuring out what works and why it works.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go.
All right. We're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we'll finish this up with a little bit more questions.
Oh, my wife and I were happy, and some might call it happy, when we bought our first house in New Orleans.
New Orleans.
We had such friendly neighbors, even though we were just strangers, but everything was not so great, it seems.
As it seems.
One night we met a tall, lanky man who was quite pale. Descended from the Vikings, he said with pride. My wife took one small glance, and without fail, she suddenly invited him inside. She hasn't been the same since that fateful night, and upon her neck I think I see love bites. Upon her neck, I think I see love bites. Love bites. Now she spends her nights in the park. She wakes up when it's near dark. She spends all evening out from dusk till dawn.
Dusk till dawn.
She sleeps all day, makes no noise. I fear she may be lost, boys. And on TV, True Blood is always on.
Always on.
It seems she's taking a job on the night watch on the graveyard shift inside Salem's lot. She has a thirst for something a bit thicker than scotch, and never lets a bleeding wound clot. Once bitten by that man, she's out till the twilight, and I fear she might leave me. Love bites.
Love bites.
Love bites.
Love bites.
I fear she might just leave me. Love bites. Love bites. It seems like every night she's out there with him.
Out there with
I don't know how much more I can take. She
take?
Says that on that night we let the right one in, but I fear that her heart may be at stake. So now my wife has left me, and now I feel drained empty, although she always said I was her type.
Be positive.
But that last laugh will be mine, because all during this time, my new girlfriend named Buffy's worth the hype.
Now you'll live.
I just can't forgive the way she left me. And if I run into that man in the dark aisle, give him the silver necklace she gave back to me. And at least that lanky bastard doesn't sparkle. So listen to my story, and it's not out of spite. Believe me when I say, love bites.
Love bites.
Love bites.
Love bites.
Please believe me when I say, love bites. Love bites. Yeehaw.
That was Love Bites by Insane Ian. Found at The Funny Music Project at thefump.com. Once again, this episode is brought to you by KingTractorPress.com. That's right, go to KingTractorPress.com for a variety of comics, including later in the 5th anniversary of the Webcomic Beacon months that we're doing this, we are going to be giving away his 3 printed works, the first 2 volumes of Family Bones, as well as volume 1 of Innocent. Haven't decided when we're going to give those away just yet, but in the meantime, you can check out other things from Sean Granger at KingTractorPress.com. And now, back to the show. I'm not sure if you both are actually looking at this right now, but I am. Okay. There's that one question that's not a question.
Not a question so much as a point.
Right.
And it's a paragraph long.
It's several paragraphs.
It's like the most noticeable one on the page.
But let's start with one for both of you again. How did you two meet? And at what point did you guys start being art buddies?
I remember when we physically met in person, but I can't remember when we first met online. I know that we met through DeviantArt.
Yeah, probably.
When we first met in person, it was at Angoulême, which is it's the biggest comics convention in Europe, and it's held yearly in Angoulême, France. And when I posted on DeviantArt that I was going there, Chloe sent me a message on DeviantArt and was like, hey, do you want to meet up? And I was like, yeah, okay. And I remember that I know that I met her through DeviantArt because I still have her name on my phone listed as Nana51. Yeah. Which is her DeviantArt.
My old DeviantArt username.
So we can go look at all your old DeviantArt stuff. We're like,
I've just changed my username now on DeviantArt. You can change your username if you're a premium membership person. I remember as well. We met at a Chat Noir restaurant or something, or bar.
At a bar, and it was Le Chat, the Black Cat.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I remember that it was. I seem to remember more about this than you. Maybe it made a bigger impression on me, Chloe.
Yes, we know who cares more in this relationship.
I remember that it was late in the evening. I'd had a really long day of train rides to travel there, and we met at this bar, Le Chat Noir. And I remember, I always get kind of nervous when I'm meeting somebody from the internet because I had never even seen a picture of her before, so I had no idea what to expect.
I remember taking your leg to go like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
Because you just kind of passed by, and I'm just like, I didn't kick you. I mean, I didn't hurt you or anything, but it was like, you just kind of passed by and didn't see me. So I was like, hey, I'm here, you know. And the first thing you said is, oh, hey, Chloe, you know what? I saw something before, and I just really want to see before it closes if I can just buy something from that stand or something. And I'm like, okay, and you just ran out.
It was a Junko Mizuno thing, and I was afraid they were going to close. I was really excited to see you, but I also really wanted to see Junko Mizuno's.
Well, but we know where you fall on the totem pole of things.
I remember being really pleasantly surprised by Chloe, because you know you're never going to know what somebody is like when you barely know anything about them and you only knew them from DeviantArt. But I remember another one of the first things I said was, wow, you look like Natalie Portman.
Oh yeah. And then I'm like, who's Natalie Portman again? And then she showed me and I was like, holy fuck, she's hot.
Maybe I should try that out. No, never mind. Hey, you look like Natalie Portman. Somehow.
Yeah, then it just started, we started seeing each other actually at Angoulême and the FACS and just basically comic conventions. And that's how we started being art buddies. And then...
cheerleader, I made her always go talk to editors at Angoulême because she didn't bring a portfolio the first time. And I was like, what? So next time she brought a portfolio.
I had barely any, I didn't have much on me when I came by. I was really unprofessional about it, but it was my first time at Angoulême. I just wanted to see how things went. But yeah, Yamina has been a great help in comic conventions, pushing me to go see publishers and stuff. And I'm like, but I don't know. I'm not sure about this. She's like, go. They'll like your drawings. Go. God damn it.
You never know.
Did you get a job working on a, what was that magazine the second year that we went?
The Fruit Glacial.
Yeah.
It's a pretty famous French magazine that's a lot about sex and stuff. So Yamina's like, hey, this is your thing. Go and talk to them.
This is totally up your alley. Go, charm them.
And I did a little comic strip for them, and that was fun. But since then, afterwards, I had a lot of things to do with just my webcomic and other projects, so I just kind of, we stopped emailing each other with the editor, but it's not. I mean, I always know that if I want to do something for them again, I can just email her and going like, hey, I'm alive. And she'll be like, oh, hey, it's been 2 years. But
let's go with the one and only question specifically for Chloe.
Oh, yay.
If you would meet a person that is the exact opposite of you, depressive, pessimistic, stoic, avenging, and if that person would turn out to be your twin separated at birth, would you like them?
That's an interesting question.
That's what it says. Would you like them?
It would be really, really interesting to see them and meet them. I don't know that I truthfully love them, but I would actually volunteer to go meet up that person, and I will be really, really, really curious to see, like, how's my exact opposite, like, how does he live, how does, I don't know, and plus it says him, so, you know, if it's a man, how do I look like as a man? As a really grumpy man, but, you know, still a man, so.
Well, I suppose that'd be technically the exact opposite. I did change that to be them just in case, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I can't say, really. I've never met that person yet. I mean, if we're twins, maybe one day. But
I think the person asking is assuming that just because you're related to someone, you have to like them. But that's not really the case. Like, you can be a twin of somebody and hate them. Like, if they're a horrible person, you're not obliged to like them.
Yeah, right. If that's the question, then I would really be curious of how things turned out to be this way and why my parents will know. But
well, maybe that's why you were separated. It was some sort of science experiment where all the good things went into you and all the negative things went into them.
It would be kind of like a comic, and I would really feel like the hero, and then the twin would be my ego and the big bad guy of the story, and then in my comic, there will be like a sort of fight, but spiritual kind of way, and going like, and in the end, like, love would win, and there will be rainbows sprouting from his eyes, and then he will discover that love truly exists in all of us, and that, something. The end.
So you're saying you'd be Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you'd be Danny DeVito.
So, Chloe, basically, you're saying that you would use the power of love to brainwash your twin and change them into
him. Not brainwashing, but, you know, adding my bit of sparkles into him. And he'd recognize that, yes, he has a chance to be happy and, you know, and stuff.
Chloe, are you a magical girl?
I totally am.
They're just like the Wonder Twins.
So your evil twin is actually like Queen Beryl or something.
I transform water into beer. And every chest that I touch transforms into boobs.
Hey! So
those are my powers.
I like those powers. I approve.
That would really be a pain if everything you touch turns into boobs, though. Can you imagine you're trying to grab a drink and like, oh, God.
It's a chest.
It's like the Skittles touch commercials.
All right. So there's a question that's for Yamino, but I'm pretty sure it could be answered by both of you. I'll just ask it as it's written here. How hard was it to create fan fiction comics revolving around the characters Marceline and Bubblegum from Adventure Time while still portraying those characters' personality without taking it too far from the show? Like keeping the storyline from the show, from the episode What Was Missing, part of the comic?
Well, it really wasn't hard at all because I was very inspired by the show and that episode. And also Adventure Time is one of those shows where almost anything can happen. So you can kind of take it any direction you want. It's a very liberating story to work with. Oh, the cat is coming to sit on me. Hello. But yeah, I wouldn't say it was very hard actually.
But you do have your own vision of the characters. 'Cause I remember you telling me that, for example, the way people looked at Marceline, for you, they kind of ignored the fact that she actually shows a lot of emotions and that she can cry easily and blush.
It helps
more
a lot
so than Bubblegum.
Yeah, it helps a lot to have a lot of headcanon about the characters. But also, I felt like when I was reading some comments on some illustrations and comics that I did, I got the impression that at least back then when I was still working on the comics pretty often, people were thinking of Marceline as this like total badass character who's like really stoic and likes to live alone, like a lone wolf type. And I'm like, that is not her at all. Have you even been watching the same show? She is so vulnerable. She's the most vulnerable character in the show. She cries a lot. She blushes easily.
She pushes
she's
people
very
away.
Insecure. And she loves hanging out with, she's like desperate to hang people, but always scared that they're going to hurt her. And Bonnabelle is kind of the opposite. Like, she's extremely confident. She has a legion of loyal subjects who adore her unconditionally. She has like no problems with her self-confidence whatsoever. She's actually a bit prideful. That's, I think, if you had to pick one main flaw, it would be that. And I really like that role reversal. That's one of the reasons that I like their pairing so much, because generally when you have about like a badass vampire and a pink princess, those roles be reversed. And I think people tend to inject their own stereotypes on them when they make their own fan work. I've seen fanfic and stuff where they make Marceline this like totally badass like lone person, and I'm like, no, that's not her.
Stop it, guys.
Well, I think you get that happening, like even with like, you know, I haven't seen Adventure Time for a while, but like you definitely see that even with like professional writers who are doing things where like two writers will be working with like the same character and they'll have like totally different interpretations of the character. And so like, you know, it's like you'll be reading superhero comics and you get to like a new writer's arc and you're just like, oh, flip the table, like, giving up on this comic because like, you know, you feel like all of the things that like they sort of took out of the character are things that you're like, you know, like that's not the character at all. And,
you know, I think they've been generally pretty consistent with their writing, but I have to say that my favorite episodes for both Marceline and Bubblegum's writing has been by Rebecca Sugar. So I think if I was going to go with one writer's interpretation of them, it would be hers. Yeah. I'm so sad.
Sorry.
It's okay. Go on.
To say that, and plus Rebecca Sugar, after that episode aired and then everyone, the fandom exploded, she actually said something like on her Tumblr going like, yeah, I'm seeing all these fan arts and I love them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was supportive of that.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing when finally you have an artist that goes like, yeah, we I actually know about this fandom and I like it. I like, you know, and you're just like, oh God, you just, you just feel like the heaven has been opened and the sunshine is, you know, caressing your skin and.
Because in any earlier fandom, the artist didn't interact so much with fans, so it was like one of the first times that this happened.
Mm-mm.
But I think we deviated a little bit from the question. Basically,
did we?
No. I think it's all relative, especially when you're working with other people's creations playing in their sandbox, essentially.
And I think sometimes that can be hard if you don't really know what they have in mind for those characters. But I maybe this is a little arrogant of me to say, but I felt like I had a really good grasp of what Marceline and Bubblegum's personalities were like and how they would react in situations. And a lot of it was also my own headcanon.
Yeah.
But I thought about it so much that, of course, I had lots of my own little headcanons to use. So I never felt like I had a dearth of material to use.
Do you ever worry about getting flack from the creators, whether it's legal flack or anything like that?
When it comes to selling stuff, I wouldn't sell Adventure Time merchandise because I don't want to get in trouble for that. But if one of the official creators came to me and was like, oh, I think your art is stupid or something, I would be like, who are you? Like, I don't care what they think. I'm pleased if they like it, but I'm allowed to draw what I want.
But don't you sell prints?
I do sell prints at conventions, but it's not on a big enough scale. Like, I wouldn't put them in my online store and sell, like, tons and tons of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that can sometimes be a bit of a contention for, like, a lot of people. I've gone to, like, anime conventions before, and I always get... I personally get a little upset when I look at almost all of the artists there. And they're all... That's all they got. They're selling, granted, their own art, but it's all of stuff they don't own the copyright to. And it's like... I mean, certainly there's a market for that, and some anime cons sort of, you know, bust down on that, that only, like, a percentage has to be, like, original versus fan art, to the point. Because it's like, I always look at, like the actual people that are there selling their own stuff completely get passed by.
Well, that's what sometimes they say.
Here's the thing. I think that if you're doing fan art that's like shippy art, which is what a lot of Chloe and I do, and we've both sold like Sugarless Gum fan art, that's not something that the official creators are providing. Mm-hmm. So we're not taking money away from them because they're not making an alternative for that. Like, if people wanted to buy like fan comics about Marceline and Bubblegum kissing or whatever, they're not going to get that from Cartoon Network.
Mm-hmm.
From them. We are actually promoting them. If you think about it, like, seeing all of this Adventure Time stuff out there is getting more people inspired and excited about the show. So in a way, I think it actually is helping the show because we're not taking money for something that they are also doing, and we're energizing the fandom. So, and we're not making tons of money off of it. Like,
no.
I remember talking to the guy who does Brawl in the Family, and he was saying that, like, they wrote to Nintendo and said, like, hey, are we allowed to sell these, like, you know, card decks and t-shirts and stuff? And Nintendo basically got back to them saying, like, you know, some kind of form letter, but it was basically like, you're not big enough for us to care. Kind of like, you know, like, go ahead and do it. Like, we're not going to do anything to you.
Huh.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I hate to say it, but, well, hopefully this won't be the case anymore, but at least for the last couple of years, if I wasn't selling fan art in addition to original work, I would not be able to cover the cost of even attending. So, because
right. But you're also selling your own work, too. That's the thing.
Yeah, alongside that, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's kind of like that whole, like, argument that people always have, you know, they're like, oh, why do people like my fan art more than my original stuff? And it's like, well, it's, like, recognizable characters that they already know and care about, and, you know, like, it's sort of like the gateway drug. They'll see your fan art, and then they'll, like, get interested in your original stuff.
And, like, at conventions, when you need to literally stop people at your table and talk to them a little bit, it's good to have something like... And you know what else is really good? Doing parodies and crossovers, because it can't get you for that, because parody is fair use. So my that was my best seller at the last couple conventions. I always sold out of it, and I don't feel bad selling that because it's a parody, so I'm allowed to.
Which one? And which one was your bestseller?
Friendship Time. It's a crossover between Adventure Time and Friendship is Magic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that one. That was pretty cute.
So you have a big poster like that, people will stop by your table and go, hey, look at that. And while they're trying to figure out who all the characters are, you can be like, oh, so you like that? Well, you might also like my one.
You know, Yami knows good with that.
Keep busy about this.
Let's see here. I got one more question to ask. This one says it didn't actually say who it was for, but I am assuming that it was for Yamino. But, okay, as a creator of a webcomic full of female characters, I suppose you spend a lot of time working on giving them strong personalities. I wonder, can you name some strong female characters, fictional or not, that you've used as a reference of guide to build your cast? I'm not necessarily referring to the look of your character. And so that's the question.
Yeah, I heard that earlier, and I was a little bit, I don't really know what to say, because I don't know what they mean by a strong character. Like Claire herself was largely based on two nun characters from movies I really enjoyed as a kid. Maria from The Sound of Music and Sister Roberts, Mary Roberts from Sister Act. And they're both very different characters, but they're both, I would consider, strong characters in different ways. And I think when it comes to creating a quote unquote strong personality, there's many ways to go about that. You can be like a strong warrior type who's like resilient against all kinds of obstacles and hardships, or you can be a more quiet, strong character who's like very supportive, the type who like makes the whole group of characters bond or can together.
I think what they're asking, because they say that they're not a native speaker, so there might be some error in grammar, but how I'm interpreting this question as far as like the personalities, like the strong personalities you have for your own characters, can you name, are any of them, like you already mentioned, Sister Claire is sort of based off of a couple of different ones. What about any of your other characters? Are they based off any other fictional or not strong female characters?
Yeah, like Catherine, I think, is one of, she has a very strong personality because she's been through so much, and I haven't really gotten a chance to explain all of it in the comic yet, but I will soon.
Okay.
She's based on, well, her look was based on an anime character from My Hime, but her personality was nothing like hers. I'm trying to think, but I think a lot of the characters aren't necessarily based on specific fictional characters, but just kind of a myriad of influences. Like Catherine is kind of a protective mother type of character. And she always means well, but she makes a lot of mistakes because she always assumes that her way is the right way, and it's not always. And like the twins are actually based a lot on me. Like if I had to think of characters that I associate with the most in my own comics, it would be the twins, because they are very energetic and impulsive and excitable. And
they like bright colors and pink and Team Rocket.
More idealistic than me, but like, yeah. I don't really know how to answer the question.
I think you did the best you could.
Okay.
I think that's what they were asking about. When I think you answered it for the most part.
I also base characters a lot on influences from people that I know in person. Like I have a lot of friends who have gone through different struggles and things, and I include some of their stories into my work, either intentionally or, you know, not really realizing I'm doing it, but that happens.
Go ahead.
Sorry. That's basically how I create my characters from Go Get a Roomie. It's basically the same thing. It's most of the time friends, and I just kind of take a personality from a friend, or and then their passion, and then their physical look, and then I just kind of make a character out of everything that I know of. Because when you put something from a friend in your characters, it's more credible because you actually know them and you can ask them questions about that part of them, instead of completely making up something that might be kind of subtle to talk about, and you don't really know how to explain it. And it really helps when you actually have a friend that's been through something in particular that can share their visions, and that way you have less chance to be to offend people. Some people have had situations where you really have to be subtle about the how you explain it. And so basically for me, it's a lot of help. I didn't really do it intentionally for that matter, but it's a lot of help to take things from your friends, from the people that you know of, or your family and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Chloe, that a lot of your characters come from you? Like, I find personally...
Oh, that too, yeah.
Most of my cast is based on, like, little elements of me, but they're extremely... If you associate with your characters, you can't really write them, because otherwise they'll just be a stereotype and you won't really know what
you're
doing.
Yeah, of course. Totally. They totally true is the fact that they all have parts of me. That's how you come to love them as well. And it's really fun. You can sometimes discover things about yourself through that character.
It's almost like the writing equivalent to like learning to draw from life. It's sort of like, you know, when you're younger and you're designing characters, you're like, oh, I want to be like Link and Goku and stuff. And then when you're older, you're like, all right, I'm pulling from like all these real people and like these features that I've decided I like for this character. And then, you know, it's sort of like when you're younger, you're like, oh, he's going to be like Link and Goku. And when you're older, it's like, oh, well, he's going to kind of like represent all my insecurities, or he's going to be like my friend who's like going through this thing in life right now, where it's like, you know, it's like now you're drawing from real people and real issues.
All right, I think there's that one last statement. I don't know if you both read it or not, if you wanted to comment on that or not. We don't have to.
Let me read through it again really quickly.
Okay, while you're reading, I'm gonna talk about something else real quick. So for those that don't know, the Webcomic Beacon podcast is hitting its 5th anniversary this year. And basically from the end of November through December, we're doing giving away prizes and such. And all you have to do is listen to win, for the most part. Right now there was a prize thing for this particular episode. That one's already closed. There's another episode that's coming up. We're going to be having the Double Clicks and Molly Lewis. And most people will probably remember Molly Lewis from the song My Hope, back in 2008, I believe. We're going to get both of them on, so you can submit an email question for either of them or for both of them, and you can get in a chance to win both of their latest albums. Additionally, we just had an episode with Michael Corley, who is basically a professional performer. And that particular one, if you listen to that episode, and it's towards the end of the show, I'll give you that for the prize keyword. And then you email that to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Up to 4 people can win a personalized voicemail message from Mark, myself, our announcer Witchy Bunny, or from Michael Corley, of which we've had on the show and has also has done some voice work. And then if you go to webcastbeacon.com, you see the 5th anniversary post and all the different prizes that are going to be coming up with as well. So I'll be talking about that through the month. And one last thing I do got to mention, there is an artist's charity drive to benefit Hurricane Sandy victims. It's going to be set on December 1st, 2012. Essentially, it's going to be where a bunch of artists are going to be getting together online and sort of like do like a telethon where people go donate to the Red Cross. They come back with the receipts saying, hey, I've donated. And then artists will live draw a sketch for them.
That sounds so cool.
Yeah, Sounds kind of like what Pseudofolio was doing on Tumblr a while back.
Actually, they are a part of this as
oh,
well.
Oh, yeah. You just interviewed them a couple days ago, didn't you?
Yeah. I interviewed them. It was an email-based interview, and you can find that. I'm not sure if it's easy to find on the site, but it certainly is on my Tumblr. I'll get that out.
Yeah, I saw them reblogged a couple days ago.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's like when your friends' social circles kind of like overlap with each other, and you're like, "Oh, it's a small world."
Yeah, that's pretty cool when it happens.
Actually, I was already talking with for people that don't know, Pseudonym is the person that did that "Can I Be Drawn Better" comic that some people probably have seen here and there. And I just like, hey, I'd like to interview you about this because a lot of people are really differently interpreting your comic. So I started doing this interview with them, and Tom from the Webcomic Beacon newscast was already in talks with like Ian Sampson, and who was in talks with Pseudonym to basically do this drive. So it's like, without me knowing, you know, it's small world. So I'll post.
I always like to think of him as like Suedo because he spelled his name wrong.
Right. I'll put links to these in this particular post so you can find everything that you need to know for everything that I just mentioned. And with that, did you want to comment on that one point?
I had a chance to read through it. And so basically what they're saying here is, I'll just read the ending part, which was the main point. Yeah. So my fan work, specifically shipping, is this. Yeah, some pairings just exist because they're fun or you want to see your favorite character with someone. Other pairings fill a much more important need. Fans are drawn to the story that makes the most dramatic sense, canon or not. So when writers are too chicken shit, that's what they said, to go there, it's the duty of the fans to finish the story in the direction that it seemed to be going. Whether it's killing off a character or pairing two characters of the same sex together, whatever, it's up to the fans to unmeddle executive meddling.
Take that.
Okay. Well, I agree to an extent. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's the fans' duty, because that makes it feel like an obligation. I definitely think the fans should be allowed to do that without being shamed or attacked for it. Because I agree that especially fans who are a minority, like on the LGBT spectrum or, you know, ethnic minorities, they should always feel open to interpreting a character as they wish to associate better with them because they have so little representation.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have that representation in the show, they should. Yeah. I mean, why would the creators be upset that they're interpreting it in a way that lets them get more invested in the story?
Well, the one thing that I haven't heard people talk about yet, maybe they have and I just haven't heard it, Disney buying Star Wars.
I honestly thought they already owned it because there's so much Star Wars stuff at like all the parks and all the Disney stores sell Star Wars stuff. So
you would think.
But it seems kind of like when Disney bought Pixar.
Lucas always had this kind of hands-off approach to fan art and fan stuff, but Disney definitely doesn't have that approach. So, I think you might see more and more of a crackdown on that fan-based stuff, at least with Star Wars, anyway.
They seem to have, like, left Marvel fans alone for the most part. Like, you still see people selling, you know, like, all their, I don't know, like, sexy naked Hawkeye pinups at conventions and stuff.
This reader is talking about shipping art, and I don't think they're talking about selling anything. They're talking about, like, fans...
Like how much the artist can add to the story, and perhaps sometimes when the fans feel like something's missing, like the Marceline and Bubblegum episode, with what was missing, when I saw the preview, I was like, it's love, they're missing love. And it is kind of, and I actually did a little mini comic of that part because we didn't know what was actually missing from the preview, and I drew the door opening and it was kind of like the fangirl squealing because they kissed and whatnot, but and I think it is a sort of duty now for us, like Yamino or I and a lot of other shipping artists, because people are now kind of counting on us to bring the lady love from shows that they feel like it would work in the show, and that the show kind of didn't want to do that because, you know, it's not totally normalized yet, and there's still some taboos about that. So mm-hmm. I think it is kind of important for us to keep doing that in always a respectful way. I mean, it's not like we think that we're writers from the show and we know better than anyone else, but we do have, I think we do help a lot of our fans from to accept things, to accept like what they might feel about a show and something, to just tell them, yeah, there's nothing to be ashamed. It's, you know, it could happen and it could work, and, you know, let's keep on drawing this, and who cares what the others think, you know?
When the whole fallout happened with the What Was Missing episode, we haven't actually talked about that on the show yet, but basically after the internet exploded when this episode came out, because everybody was thinking like, oh my God, is Sugarless Gum going to become canon? And well, Sugarless Gum is the name of that show, by the way, for Marceline and Bubblegum.
Right.
And it was coined in that episode because Marceline says, sorry, I'm not sweet enough for you. And so they start calling the ship Sugarless Gum because she's not sweet enough. but yeah, one of the creators responded pretty badly to it. And I'm not going to name any names, but he was one of the writers for the show for that. Mm. And he kind of lambasted the Adventure Time mathematical video series, which does episode recaps. They're not affiliated with the writing team. And they were asking readers to call in and say what they thought about the possibility of Marceline and Bubblegum actually hooking up. And that was what freaked out the whole internet. They were like, oh my God, the official people are asking us what they think about the pairing. And they were like, yeah, if we called enough, they might actually consider making it canon. And we know now that they're actually not affiliated with the writing team. Mm. And that's why the writer guy who spoke up about it was pissed, because they're making it out like we might actually change our story depending on what the calls are, even though we've already written it way in advance. Mm. But so many people called in and they were really supportive, and just I know some people who were like crying over the phone because they were just so excited that the possibility of two girls being a couple on a cartoon show was put out there. Like,
it is amazing. I mean, I've talked about it and to a lot of people. It's just, and some people just don't realize, a lot of my friends and stuff, they're like, you know, they're patting me on the head going like, there, Chloe, we know you like women, and, you know, it's cute, you know. They don't realize, and they're like, yeah, it's a cartoon show, okay, there you go, Chloe, everything will be all right. And I'm like, yeah, they just don't realize the importance. Like, kids watch that show. Adventure Time is the best show for me that I know of that could actually have that. And it could work, and people would accept it, and actually a lot of people encourage it, but it would be really the kind of show that will make it acceptable to so many kids, and it will make a huge difference to them, because kids are educated in a way, and a lot of them come to hate minorities because they're, from the start, they've been educated that, yes, you know, this is normal, this is not normal, so you should hate, that's not normal, whatever, it's not normal. So it would actually be huge, you know, if they actually did that, so.
I was having a conversation with someone, like, yesterday about how it, you know, it seems like it's easier to get, like, you know, whenever people are like, oh, like, how do you explain, like, gay marriage to kids or whatever, it's like, it seems like it's easier for them to grasp the concept of it than somebody who's been, like, having it hammered into their head their whole life, that it's, like, you know, something weird and spooky or whatever.
Jump in and add something really quick before I forget it. The other thing is that not only will it help kids who aren't gay to become more accepting, but for kids who are just starting to struggle with their own sexuality and realize they might associate with this character, it could make a huge difference to them. Like, I was talking to some people who were saying how when they were younger, they felt suicidal because they had no representation at all in the media, and they felt like such a freak because they had nothing to associate with. Mm. And might not seem like a huge deal to, you know, straight people who they have billboards and TV shows and everything that represents them. But if you have nothing, it really, it hurts you from a very early age. You start to feel like a freak. And that's why I was going to continue, like, what happened after that mathematical video aired, it was taken down because the writer had complained about it, and the owner of Frederator Studios was like, oh no, we've offended the Adventure Time writers. And so he took down the video, and then people got mad and they got upset, and they were saying like, oh no, Cartoon Network is censoring everything. Let's send them lots of emails to tell them that we support this, this video channel, and we don't want them to censor.
I'm sorry.
And then they took down the entire channel and they fired the video. And that was when my heart really broke for all the people who had been so excited about this and thinking they were going to get some representation. And that's the response we got, was that it was all taken down.
I think that's when I started
the Sugarless Gum blog, because I felt like they needed an outlet, like something to, it sounds almost overly dramatic, but it did feel like we suffered a loss, like someone had died, like the whole fandom who had been so excited about this. It's like under our feet.
I think it wasn't as so much as in like, oh, well, we were mistaken that there would be this sort of representation. It almost, I'm not sure if this was just my thinking or if somebody else said it, but it was almost as though the LGBT community dared to think that they would have some representation.
It wasn't just that we dared to think, they were talking about it in the video. They were saying, please call in and tell us what you think about the possibility of this pairing. So yeah, they got us all excited, and then they were like, oh, nope, censored, forget that ever happened, that never happened.
Yeah.
And
it was just,
wah.
You can't do this to us. How can we ever forget about that? Even now we're talking about it. It's been, what, a year? More than a year?
It's heartbreaking because I was reading all these comments by, like, very young, like girls who were fans of the show that were saying, like, oh, I really thought for a moment that they were going to make something that I could associate with. I was so wrong. Like, and, oh, it was really heartbreaking for me.
Hmm.
Say, oh, it's just a cartoon. Like, it kind of ticks me off because cartoons are important, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, you know, people are bombarded with the media like every day from like every angle. And whenever people are like, oh, it's just media, it's like, you know, you're totally saturated in this like all the time. And you can't get away from it.
Yeah. There is hope. There is a ray of light in the darkness, because I haven't read any of Marceline and the Scream Queens yet. I'm planning to do that later today, actually. But I've heard that that has a lot of stuff for fans of the pairing that will kind of soften the blow of all of that censorship and stuff. And I really feel like the reason that the Adventure Time comics started and the spinoff about Marceline and Bubblegum started is because of that fiasco. And they saw all of the enthusiasm that was poured into it. So they thought, well, maybe we can't do it in the animated show yet, but we can start putting a little bit of it into the comics. So
that's kind of like what happened with Gargoyles. Like, I wish the Gargoyles comic got to keep going on, because there was like all the stuff that they sort of weren't allowed to put in like a Disney afternoon cartoon show. they were like, you know, putting that in, like, you know, getting away with it in the comics, I guess.
But I mean, if anybody could get away with it would be Adventure Time, and I think it would be for them to start that ball rolling for kids.
All right, so we're about an hour and a half into this episode, so I think it's time to wrap things up so I can go rest. But so are there any final thoughts on this particular episode?
I had fun.
All right. Yay!
Don't send your fan fiction to creators, because they're not legally allowed to read it. And if they use ideas that you had, then they might get sued later. So,
yeah. Sometimes they actually do read, but they say they can't read. And yeah, so
they're not supposed to. If they acknowledge that they do, then it's like legal issues for them.
Right. So we've had all these questions asked, and I will get with Yamanoa and Chloe to for them to each pick a winner. I'm not going to do it right now. I need to get to bed. and then I will contact the winners via the email that they sent, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. Okay, so we don't have to choose right now, then.
No, you guys got a link. You got a link to all the questions, so you can just get back to me whenever.
Okay, that's cool.
And man, I thank you both for coming on to the show. This is something I've been wanting to, I've been trying to do for a few months now. And basically, I was waiting to be able to mail Yamino Adventure Time comics so she could sign them and get them back to me so I could use those as prizes too. So
sorry it took so long.
Oh no, you're busy and you just moved to America.
Yeah,
where at? Or I guess that's not. You know, give me your location. It's public internet.
But East Coast, I think.
Yes. I'm on the East Coast.
All right.
She won't say any more than that.
Yeah.
I am somewhere between the Atlantic and the Pacific.
There are little hints on my Tumblr blog, but I've been careful not to be super specific because, you know, as one of the previous questions showed, I have a lot of people who don't like me on the internet, and I don't want them to find me, so...
I always get worried I'm going to have, like, some crazy stalker, like, show up outside my work. I had, like... some near misses in Toronto where there were like really creepy people who were, you know, like I don't know. I'm like sidetracking this again, but like I went back to my DeviantArt for like the first time in like months and months. And there was somebody who posted like, it was my like Toronto address that, you know, I haven't lived there for years, but you know, they were like, hey, is this you? Is it, you know, can I drop by? Somebody's like, what? Like, Jesus. It was so creepy. And
Tony's found an address that I had lived at in California over 10 years ago, and they were telling people to start flaming me and sending stuff there. And I really, somebody else lives there now and it's not me.
Oh, wow. All right. So that is going to be it for this episode of the Webcomic Beacon, reminding you not to be an asshole to your fans. Not to be an asshole to your heroes.
Don't be an asshole to anybody.
Don't be an asshole, period.
Don't be a dick.
So once again, we've had Yamino from SisterClaire.com. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And Chloe from GoGetARuby.com. Thank you once again.
Thank you.
And I've been Fess of ArcherComic.com.
Kelly of ManlyGuys.com.
And this is Mark from AutumnLake.com.
And be sure to check on the website for all the links to things you can win this month and next month, and also for that artist's charity event. See you next time.